one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, well, it's all over, but Christopher Sanchez makes history on Wednesday night. We'll tell you how far he went in his consecutive scoreless inning streaks and where it ranks among the all-time best in Major League Baseball. Also, Sanchez wins a Major League Baseball award on Wednesday. So we'll tell you about that. The Phillies won a series against the Padres, and there's still one game left to go. And I swear, if these teams played 1,000 games, I feel like 990 of them would all go exactly the same way. So we'll talk about that coming up. Nick Castellanos DFA'd by the Padres in Philadelphia. I'll have some thoughts on that. And the Phillies did get an update on Aiden Miller, their top positional prospect, one of the top prospects in all of baseball, one of the Phillies' very few top prospects, what it's looking like for his return from back soreness. We've got to actually have a diagnosis there. So we'll get into that stuff here on this edition of Hittin' Season. But we will start off with history being made at Citizens Bank Park on Wednesday night against the Padres as Christopher Sanchez throws six shutout innings, but then in the seventh inning gives up a run to the San Diego Padres. Now, ordinarily, this would not be big news, but it was the first time in 50 and two-thirds innings that Christopher Sanchez had allowed a run. That places him fifth place all time in Major League Baseball history, the fifth longest scoreless inning streak behind Jack Coombs, 53 innings, Walter Johnson, 55 and two-thirds, Don Drysdale, 58, and of course, Oral Hershiser, 59 innings pitched of scoreless baseball in 1988. Just an incredible run by Christopher Sanchez. It ends at 50 and two-thirds innings. Only five pitchers in the history of the entire sport have gone 50 or more straight innings without giving up a run. Christopher Sanchez is one of them. Gave up a two-out double to Ty France and then an opposite field single by Jackson Merrill to Brandon Marsh. And I really feel like a good throw to the plate there nails Ty France at the plate. If it's a good throw, and I'm not going to get on Brandon Marsh too much about this. He's been one of the Phillies' best players. He's a very good left fielder. Just a bad throw. He had the ball in pretty shallow left field, medium depth left field by the time France was rounding third and just kind of threw a ball into the ground. It hit the infield grass right around the pitcher's mound and died before it could even get to JT Realmuto. So a really good throw probably gets the runner and keeps Christopher Sanchez's scoreless streak alive. But regardless, what an incredible run. What an incredible run by Christopher Sanchez. And the crowd at Citizens Bank Park gave Sanchez a 50-second standing ovation. It was so long that home plate umpire Hunter Wendelstadt was reading the room. He allowed the moment to breathe. He did a really good job on that. He went out and dusted off home plate, took his time doing it so that the crowd could properly ovate Christopher Sanchez and what he had accomplished there. As he's listening to the applause, he looked over at the first base dugout and released. It was a big grin, big smile from Christopher Sanchez taking in the moment. Just a really fun time at Citizens Bank Park. It's a shame he wasn't able to put together another nine innings of shutout baseball, but that was a long shot to begin with. And just to have his name where it is, fifth all-time in scoreless innings, it's a run that Phillies fans will never forget. It will live in Phillies history forever. But a really, really cool thing by Hunter Wendelstadt to allow Christopher Sanchez. You know, they put the pitch clock in because they want the game to move along. But it is nice when you see human beings reacting to the moment, understanding that there are some moments in sports, in Major League Baseball, that deserve time to ruminate, deserve time to breathe, deserve time to happen. You know, we all take these moments in so that we can appreciate what we've seen on the field. And it was great on the fans' part. It was a tremendous ovation. Christopher Sanchez, after the game, said this is why the Phillies fans are the best fans in Major League Baseball. And, you know, who among us is going to disagree with that, right? So a very, very cool, historic moment on Wednesday night at Citizens Bank Park. At the end of the At the end of the day, Sanchez gave up one run in seven innings, four hits, eight more strikeouts. He only threw 84 pitches in seven innings. He was absolutely cruising in that game. I imagine if he had gotten through the seventh inning unscathed, he probably would have gone out there for the eighth. Might have gone out there for the ninth. But as it is, seven innings of one run ball. Now, although he is fifth place all time with 50 and two thirds scoreless innings, he did set the record for left-handed pitchers. No left-handed pitcher has ever had a longer scoreless streak than Christopher Sanchez. Not Sandy Koufax, not Randy Johnson, not Steve Carlton, not Clayton Kershaw, not Pat Combs, not Mike Mims. Just seeing if you're paying attention, everybody. No left-handed pitcher. Warren Spahn, Cole Hamels, the greatest left-handed pitchers in Major League Baseball, never had a streak like what Christopher Sanchez put up here in 2026. So he can at least say that. No left-handed starting pitcher in Major League Baseball history has ever had a longer scoreless inning streak than Christopher Sanchez. And Jason Stark noted that Christopher Sanchez faced the third most batters without allowing a run in the live ball era. Oral Hershiser has the record at 217, Don Drysdale 214. Christopher Sanchez faced 190 consecutive batters without allowing a run. That is third most in the live ball era. So that just shows you what kind of heavy lifting he was doing during this streak. And so now Sanchez, after that start on Wednesday night against the Padres, leads all major league starters in innings pitched. He leads all major league starters in ERA. He leads in fielding independent pitching, and he leads in wins above replacement. ERA is 1.46 on the season for Christopher Sanchez, and he has been worth 3.6 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. For all of this, for everything he did in the month of May, when he did not give up a run, Christopher Sanchez was named National League Pitcher of the Month. I gotta believe it was probably pretty close, because there were a number of arguments being made for Milwaukee starter Jacob Mizorowski. And I get it. Sanchez went 4-0, didn't give up a run, pitched 39 innings, had 45 strikeouts, and walked only three batters. Opponents hit 181 against him in the month of May. Sparkling numbers. Mizorowski went 5-0, 38 and a third innings, only less. 57 strikeouts. He had 18 more strikeouts than Christopher Sanchez, only six walks. So three more walks, but my goodness, 18 more strikeouts. Only gave up one run the entire month, a 0.23 ERA, and opponents against Jacob Mizorowski batted 109. So I think the writers made the right call. Christopher Sanchez, you have to recognize the feat of those scoreless innings he piled up in May and reward him for that. But if they had gone with Mizorowski, you probably could have made an argument that he should have won National League Pitcher of the Month for May. You won't see me making that argument, though. It was Christopher Sanchez's award to win. If you don't allow any runs, you're the pitcher of the month. Just you can give me a bunch of other stats and all that kind of stuff. You don't give up a run all month, you're the pitcher of the month. That's just, sometimes we can distill it down into the simplest things. And so again, tremendous month of May by Christopher Sanchez. He brought it over for the first six innings of June. And even the run he gave up, it just shows you how difficult it is to put together a scoreless inning streak like this. I mean, just a ground ball down the left field line for a double, and then an opposite field single through the infield. I mean, if that ball's a foot to the left, it goes right to Trey Turner. So, or a foot to the right, I guess, it goes right to Trey Turner. Right? I mean, it's that could have happened at any point during this streak, you know? It's like, what do they call it, a bloop and a blast? It wasn't quite that. But, you know, a grounder, you know, two grounders, a grounder and a line drive, but, you know, the line drive was not a rocket off the bat or anything like that, just found open field. There's lots of open space on a baseball diamond for these balls to find holes. And even though the Phillies don't find them all that often, there is room out there. And so it's just amazing that he could go this long, 50 and two thirds innings without allowing a run, because something like that, base hit, all of a sudden you give up a run. It's that simple sometimes. And so, tremendous historic making effort by Christopher Sanchez, and we all got to witness it. Something we may not see again for another 115 years. It's been this long since a Phillies pitcher had a scoreless inning streak like this. Might be another 115 years since until we see another one. The Phillies do win another series against the Padres, thanks to Christopher Sanchez's outing and a minimal amount of support by the offense. And for the first time all season, the Phillies are now 3 games over .500. They are dominating in one-run games. Now, a lot of that is because of the starting pitching and the bullpen. The back of the bullpen has been very good in these close games, 14-5 in one-run games. Now, we discussed this on a previous podcast. I think it was my solo podcast last week. That this is not sustainable. You're not going to continue to win 3-2 games at the rate at which the Phillies are winning them. But the Phillies have won the first two games of this series against the Padres 3-2. They won on Wednesday 3-2. They won on Tuesday 3-2. And if you go back to the series in San Diego last week, a lot of the games were played in kind of a similar way. The Phillies beat the Padres in the finale that Wednesday 3-0. In the game on Tuesday, they won 4-3. In the game on Monday, they won 3-0. So 3-0, 4-3, 3-0, 3-2, 3-2. The Phillies have won 5 in a row against the Padres, have not scored more than 3 runs, and they've only scored more than three runs in one of them. And in that game, they scored 4. So they are not tearing the cover off the ball against the Padres. The Padres' offense, as bad as the Phillies has been, the Padres may be worse. But led by pitching, the Phillies have won back-to-back 3-2 games, have won 5 in a row against the Padres, and are 3 games over .500 for the first time this year. The offense still has not scored more than 4 runs in a game since May 18th, and the offense still has not recorded double figures in hits in a game since May 15th. And Paul Casella of MLB.com had a little note on the hits side of that thing. It's the 13th straight game in which the Phillies failed to get 10 hits or more. That's the third longest streak in franchise history. The longest since a 14-game streak in 1972. That team was absolutely terrible that year. That was the year, of course, Steve Carlton won 27 games for like a 59-win team. So again, some of these seasons in which the 2026 offense is making history with are some of the worst teams this franchise has ever seen. It's just, this team is pitching unbelievably right now. And thankfully, the offense is doing just barely enough to support this pitching staff, but it's not enough. It's clearly not enough. But on Wednesday, the Phillies did get an RBI double by Adolis Garcia, who has been in the throes of it. He came to the park on the off day Monday for extra batting practice, something very unusual, and he's looked better these last 2 days. He hit a rope to center field for the first run of the game. That was really good to see him elevate the ball. He's hitting the ball hard. It's just everything's on the ground, and that's the same thing with a lot of these guys. Hit a rope to center field that got all the way to the wall for an RBI double. Got the Phillies on the board 1-0. After the Padres finally tied it at 1, JT Realmuto comes up in the bottom of the 7th and smashes a ball to deep left center field for his 3rd home run of the season. His first game back since getting hit by a pitch on the hand in the finale against the Dodgers. Thankfully, he's looking like he's okay and maybe starting to swing it a little bit better. And then Kyle Schwarber hit his league-leading 23rd home run for the all-important insurance run, because Brad Keller came in the game in the 8th inning, and it was dicey again for Brad Keller. A lot of base runners for this guy. I know that the baseball savant page looks good for him, but I got to tell you, there are runners all over the place in Brad Keller innings. He makes me nervous. I would not trust him much in a playoff situation right now, just because of all of the traffic on the bases with him. It just seems like he's wiggling out of a jam every time that he is in there. 2 more hits for Brandon Marsh on Wednesday night. His average now at .335. That is the best mark in Major League Baseball. And I just quickly about Brandon Marsh. Is he going to be on the All-Star team this year? You would like to think so. Because he is leading the league in batting average, he has been tremendous. He had a 4-hit game in the series opener on Tuesday night. This game's being played in Philadelphia. It would be really deserving. He would be very much deserving of being in the All-Star game. But as you look at the state of the outfielders in the National League here, it could be tough. It could be tough. I mean, let's take a look at, you know, what the wins above replacement level for some of these guys looks like. Andy Páez of the Dodgers has a 2.7 wins above replacement. He's having a tremendous season. Corbin Carroll in Arizona is having a tremendous season. James Wood is having a tremendous season. Pete Crow Armstrong, all those guys at 2.4 wins above replacement or better. Jordan Walker is having a tremendous season. 15 home runs on the season for Jordan Walker and a breakout season for St. Louis. He has one of the highest weighted runs created of any outfielder in baseball. Same with Michael Harris II. Same with Juan Soto. You know, I'm looking down the list here, and as I go down, I'm looking for Brandon Marsh, and I see him at 13th in terms of, or tied for 12th in terms of wins above replacement. I love Brandon Marsh. He's having a terrific season. He may be leading the league in batting average, but right now he's probably not an all-star. He's probably not an all-star. And then there's names that will probably get voted in, like Ronald Acuna Jr. is probably going to get voted into the all-star game by the fan base, and that will probably take up a spot. You're looking at players right now with wins above replacement, the same or better than Brandon Marsh, Teoscar Hernandez, Spencer Steer, Fernando Tatis Jr., all at 1.2. Washington's Jacob Young at 1.3. He's not a good offensive player, although the power is starting to come around with him a little bit, but he's a fantastic defender. Brian Reynolds of the Pirates is having a bounce back season. Do you know that? Weighted runs created of 135 for him. He's got 40 runs, 38 RBIs. He's one and a half wins above replacement for Brian Reynolds at the moment for the Pirates. The Pirates have another outfielder, O'Neill Cruz, who's having a really good season. 14 home runs, 45 runs, 44 RBIs, 20 stolen bases for O'Neill Cruz so far. 1.6 wins above replacement for him. And Ian Happ has a wins above replacement of 1.7, a little bit better than Brandon Marsh. So I would love to see Brandon Marsh in the All-Star game. At the moment, the numbers probably don't warrant it, although he has been tremendous for this team, easily their third best player after Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper. Let's also talk a little Joan Duran. He's had a save in both of the first two games. In save opportunities this year, this is a guy who almost certainly will be in the All-Star game. 14 saves and 14 opportunities. He has yet to give up a run in a save opportunity this season. 21 strikeouts and 2 walks in 13 and 2/3 innings. He looks absolutely dynamic right now at the back of the bullpen. I mean, I know you gave up Eduardo Tatis and Mick Abel for this guy. Tatis not off to a great start in the minors at the moment. And, you know, I liked what we saw from Mick Abel. Mick Abel earlier in the year was off to a really good start. He's still having a pretty good start for the Twins right now, but he's only made 3 starts for them. 20 and a third innings, 3.98 ERA. He has been on the injured list with a bad elbow, although it looks like he's getting ready to return soon. So, I mean, that was a deal in which the Phillies are absolutely getting value for the prospects that they gave up in that deal. Joan Duran almost certainly will make the All-Star game. He has been. I was a little nervous about him early in the season. He just didn't look quite right. Everything looks right now. I mean, that appearance on Tuesday in the 3-2 win, Jace Bowen of the Padres is a young player, very young player, hasn't seen a lot of big league pitching. He certainly has not seen a guy like Joan Duran. I have not seen an as uncompetitive an at-bat as he was swinging at sliders a foot off the plate, all 3 of them. Like, Duran was like, I don't need to come anywhere near the plate with this guy. He's just going to close his eyes and swing. And that's what he did. It was kind of a funny way to end the game on Tuesday. But Duran has just looked absolutely electric. So a well-pitched game by the Phillies on Wednesday to win 3-2. They got just enough. Again, home runs, the solo home runs, helping to... Really, the only way this team is winning right now is solo home runs or 2-run home runs. And that was the case on Tuesday night as well in another 3-2 win. Phillies get a 2-run home run from Bryce Harper in the game to tie it at 2 after Aaron Nola gave up 2 runs earlier in the game. The game winning run for the Phillies, scoring on a double play ground out by Alec Bohm, which just kind of tells you everything you need to know about this offense right now. I mean, that's how they're... I'm glad he got the run in. You know, first and third, nobody out. You put the ball in play. Even a double play gets a run home, and it turned out to be the winning run. So, I mean, you can make the argument Bohm did his job well enough. He doesn't get credit for an RBI, but he does his job well enough to at least get that runner in from third base. A strikeout is worse than a double play in that situation, and it turned out to be the winning run. So I guess tip your hat to Bohm for at least getting that run in, and it turned out to be the winning run. Marsh, as I mentioned, went 4-for-4. Aaron Nola, really another good outing from him. He struck out 8 in 5 innings of work, and I think when we're looking at Aaron Nola, it's important to kind of see what he's doing, because he's changing a lot about his about how he goes about pitching right now. In the game on Tuesday, he threw his fastball just 15.8% of the time. That is the lowest percentage of any game this season. It was down a little bit even from the previous game out in San Diego, where he dominated and only threw his fastball 17% of the time. In his start against the Cincinnati Reds at home back on May 20th, he threw his fastball 23.5% of the time. And in a game against the Pirates in Pittsburgh, he threw his fastball 32% of the time, 32.5% of the time. He's typically around 25 to 35% fastball usage. He has cut that number dramatically in his last three starts, and he's been much, much better as a result. He's averaged 25.7% fastball usage in his 12 starts, but again, 15.8%. In the start on Tuesday night against the Padres, he threw his cutter 10.5% of the time. That's up from his season average of 8.7%. So threw his cutter a lot more, threw his four-seamer a lot less. He threw his sinker more than in any other start this season, 28.4% of the time. He threw his sinker in this game against the Padres. He's only been throwing it just shy of 20%. In his 12 starts total so far this year. The knuckle curve, he threw just shy of 40%. Again, that's way up from about 34%. And he threw the changeup less. The changeup was up near 12%. He only threw it about 6% of the time in this game. So fewer fastballs, fewer changeups, more cutters, more sinkers, more knuckle curves. That's been the change in Aaron Nola over these last few starts. That is the difference that we are seeing in him. And I think that's going to be his evolution now. The fastball is a dead pitch for him, right? That's a pitch now he's using. He's just got to spot that thing. You know, every once in a while, you throw one of those, you know, 11, 12 times a game, you throw a four seamer. The rest of it, they've got to be cutters. He's got to have pitches that are moving somewhere. So you're throwing sinkers, you're throwing cutters, you're throwing your knuckle curve. The knuckle curve was really dancing on Tuesday night. And it just goes to show you don't need to be throwing a 94 mile an hour fastball in order for that knuckle curve to be effective. So we're seeing the evolution of Aaron Nola here. I think it's taken this long for him to finally understand and to realize I don't have the command on my fastball. If I make a mistake with that pitch, it's going to get blasted somewhere. So it's just not worth throwing because it's a pitch he has to be perfect with. Perfect with. And as we've talked about on previous podcasts, and Tim Kelly again from on Pattison mentioned this with the new ABS system, if an umpire is calling the fastball off the plate a strike, it's going to get overturned every time. So he can't rely on that. He can't rely on an occasional expanded zone to be able to utilize his fastball more. He's got to come over the plate with it. And that is not where he wants to live with his fastball. So another good outing from Aaron Nola here on Tuesday night. And a lot of that is a credit to the change in pitch usage. And you have to credit JT Realmuto and Caleb Cotham also for calling a different game for Aaron Nola. And so far, the results are promising. Hopefully, he can keep that up. Now, hitters are going to adjust. They're going to stop looking for the fastball. They're going to start looking for some of these other pitches. And when that happens, okay, then maybe you can sprinkle the fastball in a little bit more. Get it back over 20% for a few starts until they start to adjust for that. That's going to be the world Aaron Nola is living in, probably for the remainder of his contract. And there's going to be some starts probably where there's that transition happening between batters adjusting and then him adjusting back. And hopefully that just happens more quickly than it has in the past. But starting to see Aaron Nola stabilize a little bit, which is really, really good. And in the win on Tuesday, terrific job by the bullpen. Jose Alvarado with a scoreless inning. Orion Kerkering gave up a hit and a walk, but had pitched a scoreless inning. Brad Keller, as I mentioned, pitched a scoreless inning, but gave up two hits. And then, of course, he had Juan Duran striking out the side on Tuesday night. So good first couple games for the Phillies here against the San Diego Padres in this series. The Phillies will wrap up their series on Thursday afternoon. We have Zach Wheeler going up against Lucas Giolito looking for the series sweep of San Diego. All right, very interesting news coming out of the Padres here this week. After returning to Philadelphia and getting an ovation, I'm going to say a standing ovation, but a nice ovation from the Philadelphia crowd, the Phillies had a brief little video to celebrate the return of Nick Castellanos to Philadelphia. He was not in the starting lineup on Tuesday, which we all thought was pretty interesting, but the Phillies did a nice, they basically like dip their toe into the waters of receiving Nick Castellanos, warmly, and the fan base didn't boo. They applauded him, which I was surprised by. Maybe it shows we're growing a little bit as people, although I kind of miss the old Phillies fans every once in a while, like when we used to really give it to somebody. And Nick Castellanos, certainly, it's not like Jason Worth. When Jason just left for another free agent contract that was more than what the Phillies were willing to pay him, Nick Castellanos kind of forced his way out of town, and he's been overly complimentary of his time in San Diego and what a better place it is and all that. Well, on Tuesday, before the game, the San Diego Padres released Nick Castellanos, designated him for assignment ahead of Wednesday's game. Shocking that it's done in Philadelphia. Ice cold, as far as I'm concerned. It was just last week when the Phillies came to San Diego to play the Padres, Castellanos said, "The front office consistently asks me questions about how I see things, and when they talk to me, it's straight, which is great because then I know what's up." The implication, of course, there was that the Phillies front office and manager Rob Thomson were never asking him questions about how he saw things, and that they never shot him straight. Well, here, I guess they shot him straight because manager Craig Stammen said both sides, the Padres and Castellanos, were comfortable with how this all went down. I mean, guys, they flew him out to Philadelphia from San Diego. They flew him out on a cross-country flight to Philadelphia. Did they know they were going to make this move and flew him out to Philadelphia just so that he could get the ovation and then released him the next day? Like, did they really waste a roster spot for a game for Cast? Because they could have brought Castellanos to face Joan Duran in the ninth inning instead of Jace Bowen and chose not to. They chose to let Jace Bowen face. I mean, now, listen, I don't think Castellanos is touching Joan Duran if he had a Bodor up at the plate. But even so, the smart money would have been on Castellanos getting that plate appearance with the game on the line and trailing only by a run. Maybe Duran makes a mistake with a 101-mile-an-hour fastball and Castellanos crushes it. There's more of a likelihood of that than Jace Bowen getting a hit off of Duran in that spot. But the Padres and Craig Stammen decided not to let Castellanos hit in that spot. And then after the game on Tuesday, designated him for assignment in Philadelphia? I wonder if they flew him all the way out to Philly just so that Nick could get an applause. They couldn't have known that he was going to get an applause, by the way. I'm sure the Phillies probably said, "Hey, we're going to put something on a video board for Castellanos. Just let him know that that's going to happen." Maybe Castellanos, I'm speculating here totally, but maybe Castellanos knew that. The Padres knew that. They said, "Okay, we'll fly you out for this game. We'll keep you on the roster for a day, but we're going to DFA you after the game." I don't know about all that. That seems silly to me to waste a roster spot. Even for just one game, just so you could bring a player out to sit on the bench, sit in the dugout with your face on the camera and get an ovation from the fan base. Is that something Castellanos would have wanted? Is that something he would have pushed for? I don't like Castellanos. I've never enjoyed the whole act. I've never enjoyed it. He seems to me to be a pretty self-important guy. And so wouldn't it all surprise me if he told the Padres he wanted to be flown to Philadelphia to receive the ovation and then to be released? Because I think I don't know if he still has a home in the Philadelphia area. My guess is he, you know, knows enough people or has some place to stay, or maybe he just staying in the hotel. I don't know. I'm speculating all these different kinds of things. These are the things that you think about sometimes when you've got a few spare minutes and no other life. So I don't know what went down here, but it was weird. This was weird to fly him all the way out to Philadelphia, to not play him in the first game, and then to designate him for assignment in the middle of the series in the city in which he just talked his way out of. After the game, Stammen said both sides were comfortable, and they said basically the roster fit just didn't work with Castellanos. He said there were like three guys kind of fighting for two spots here during the course of the season, and they knew they were going to make a decision on one of these guys at some point around now, and Castellanos was the odd man out. He said that they had conversations about Nick's role on the team in recent days and weeks. Castellanos, quote, "didn't really love not playing every day." Yeah, no kidding. He said the same thing when he was here in Philadelphia. But then when he went to San Diego, all we heard is, "Oh, I'm willing to be a part-timer. I'm going to learn first base. We're going to play." He didn't mean any. He really thought he was going to end up being a starter on that team. He really thought that. He really was deluded enough into thinking that he was still a starting caliber player. Stammen said, "We just kind of felt like this was the right time for him to be DFA'd." So Castellanos leaves the Padres hitting 191 with a 560 OPS in 115 at-bats for San Diego. He had a negative 0.8 Fangraphs wins above replacement. Among 310 players with at least 100 plate appearances, that ranked 306th. And in 20 games in May, he hit 217 with three homers, one walk, and 17 strikeouts. The Padres were only paying him $780,000. The Phillies were paying like the other $19 million of that contract. And they still said, nope, this is too awful. We can't keep playing him. And you know, if he's complaining about not playing every day, despite a 191 average and a 560 OPS, if he's in there saying, if I was playing every day, I'd be better. All you have to do is have eyes and a functioning memory to see what happened in Philadelphia for the last year, couple years. It'll be very interesting to see if he signs with anybody else, if there's anybody else willing to continue to pay Nick Castellanos money to play baseball. My guess is he wants to be with his family. He wants, and that's great. He wants to be with his kids. Go home and raise your kids. You've made all the money you're going to make in this game. You know, you want to play every day, fine. But if you're not an everyday player anymore, and if the only way you can be happy is to be playing every day, then I understand that. And every fan base should understand that. Everyone should understand that. Then just retire. Go be the family man you want to be. I think that's wonderful. It's just he's not an everyday player anymore, and he needs to stop pretending like he is. And I think the Padres were, I just find the timing, the decision itself makes total sense. The timing of it is just eyebrow raising for me. But again, I'm not on the inside. I have no idea. All right. Finally, just an update on Phillies shortstop prospect, Aiden Miller, who is one of only maybe two top 100 prospects in the sport that the Phillies have. And he has yet to play this year because of a bad back. The Phillies have been very tight-lipped about what exactly has been going on with Aiden Miller. They've been talking a little bit more in recent days. While the team was in Los Angeles, Preston Mattingly met with reporters and confirmed that Miller was still not engaged in baseball activities. Every time he starts to take grounders, the back starts to act up again. He has not swung a baseball bat this year. Well, the Phillies released a detailed update on why he is still not swinging a bat. The team says that Miller has been diagnosed with, and let's see if I can pronounce this, discogenic pain and facet inflammation in the lumbar spine. Miller was seen by a spine specialist over the last couple of weeks, according to the Phillies, and doctors agreed and recommended a, quote, minimally invasive procedure called a radiofrequency ablation of the facet joints. So Miller is going to have this surgery on Friday. After the surgery, he will rest for 1 week, and then he will return to his rehabilitation. The team said that the goal is for him to return to game activity. I assume that means playing in games in 6 to 8 weeks. Now, I was looking at the calendar. That is roughly the last week of July. As we're recording this, the surgery, or the procedure, I guess is what they're calling it, would be on June 5th, Friday, June 5th. So that's roughly the last week of July before he returns to game activity. And that would essentially give him 2 months of baseball in Lehigh Valley this year. The Lehigh Valley Iron Pig season ends on Sunday, September 20th. So that would give him about 8 weeks of baseball, provided everything goes well. This is supposed to relieve the pain. This is supposed to relieve. Now, this is something he will probably need to have done every couple of years, every 3 years or so. So this does not seem like a cure, is what they're saying. It's not necessarily a cure, but what this will do will be to like kind of provide some relief with the pain and the inflammation. But at some point it will return, and these procedures will probably need to be done on a semi-regular basis, not every year, not every few years. Nobody's really sure exactly, but this, I think, impacts some decisions the Phillies are going to make with Alec Bohm, right? I mean, the plan, I think, has been to let Alec Bohm hit free agency and then elevate Aiden Miller to play third base next year in 2027 for the Phillies. But I mean, if everything goes well, if the surgery or the procedure goes well, Miller comes back, he plays 2 months of baseball at a high level at Lehigh Valley, then yeah, the Phillies probably have no problem with making him their starting third baseman or moving Trey Turner to third base and having Miller as your starting shortstop in 2027. But that plan is up in the air right now. And if anything goes sideways or haywire, then you have to try and ask yourself, would the Phillies give Alec Bohm a qualifying offer to stay one more year? They'd be dramatically overpaying him, I'm sure, on a qualifying offer, which would be well over $20 million. I don't see that happening. My guess is they find some other solution, some other alternative to play third base in that regard, in that way, because Bohm is not a $20-plus million a year player. But the plan to have Miller on the opening day roster in 2027 has hit a major speed bump this year. And I don't know if he's going to be ready to go by the time, you know, we don't know how this is all going to work out during the course of the summer. If he's going to be ready 6 to 8 weeks for playing in games, you know, maybe it takes longer. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe he's back a little earlier. Who knows? But it's this medical uncertainty, especially when you're dealing with the back, is problematic. You know, David Wright had his career shortened with back problems. Don Mattingly himself had his career shortened with back issues. It's one of those areas where there's oftentimes not an answer for an issue. And so, we're really hoping that Aiden Miller gets this figured out, but because he's really the one position prospect this team has in the organization that has all-star potential. There's, you know, as kid Francisco Renteria, this 17-year-old they just drafted, he just started playing in the Dominican Summer League. He's a ways away. Even if you get him up at 19 or 20, that's still 2028, 2029. That's not help coming anytime soon. So there's really nobody else. I mean, some of these other players, you know, Rincon, Aaron Escobar, you know, got some possibility there. Dante Norrie, who's in a big slump. You know, there's possibilities there. Gabriel Rincones, none of them are future all-stars, it doesn't seem like. They're not projecting that way. Aiden Miller could be. But right now, there's a lot of uncertainty over him. And this was not great news. But at least it was news. At least it was an update. At least they've told us something about what's going on. So that part's good anyway. All right, everybody, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to encourage you guys to check out thegoodfight.com. I've got two articles a week going on thegoodfight.com, but all of our writers over at The Good Fight are doing tremendous work covering this baseball team. So if you haven't ever checked out The Good Fight, P-H-I-G-H-T is how you spell it, check us out and share us with your friends and your family members. And also make sure to subscribe to the WHYY YouTube channel. All of the roundtable episodes that Justin, Liz, and I do can be found over at the WHYY YouTube channel. We've also got some shorter clips over there. You can follow me on X on Blue Sky at John Stolness. And if you want to send an email to the show, you can always get to us by sending an email to hittinseason@billypenn.com. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We will talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.